From the Moan Broadcast Center, this is Film Week. Welcome, I'm Larry Mantle. This week, we'll hear about several new Netflix movies. First up, Alan Yang's feature directorial debut, Tiger Tail. Also, the French comedic drama School Life, set in one of Paris's most economically challenged neighborhoods. The British romantic comedy Love, Wedding, Repeat also debuts this week. And Charles Solomon has an in-depth primer on anime, particularly good for parents wanting to catch up on the best of what their kids are watching. Some of it is pretty great. As we listen to the theme song from the original Speed Racer, it's Film Week right after NPR News on 89.3 KPCC. Adventures waiting just ahead.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
Welcome to Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us today. I'm joined by critics Charles Solomon, who covers animation for Animation Scoop and Animation Magazine. Claudia Puig is the president of the Los Angeles Film Critics Association. And Tim Cogshell reviews movies for Alt Film Guide and is critic at Synagogues.com as well. We're going to talk about the new films available for you to watch at home, as well as get some other vintage programming suggestions from our three critics this week. We begin with a new Netflix movie, Tiger Tail, written and directed by Alan Yang. Claudia, please start us off on Tiger Tail.
Well, just so people don't get it mixed up, because it is on Netflix, it's not piggybacking off the Tiger King. Despite the fact that it has Tiger in the name, that is the name of a town in Taiwan where this film partially takes place. And it's directed by Alan Yang, who is the Emmy Award-winning writer, producer, and director. He wrote and produced Parks and Rec, and he co-created Master of None with Aziz Ansari. He also did a great Amazon series called Forever. And it's loosely based on his family. It's a very quiet and moving and poignant intergenerational family saga. There's some lovely directorial flourishes, very sort of artfully framed, some stunning cinematography. It's well acted. It's basically the story of a young man who leaves Taiwan. His mother's working in a sugar factory, and they actually shoot in the sugar factory where his father and grandmother did work, Alan's father and grandmother. And it captures an immigrants to the United States, and it captures an immigrant's sense of being an outsider and feeling lost when you first emigrate. And he was a very exuberant guy when he was in love when he was living in Taiwan, and he has to leave all that behind. He goes to the United States on an arranged marriage, and his life becomes a very different life. And it's a really beautiful story. I particularly liked the actor that played him as a younger man, Hong Chi Lee. It's also about mending a rift between himself and his adult daughter. And they have this problem communicating, and he isn't as sympathetic as he could be. And he finds a way to reconnect with her, which I won't give away. But I found it beautiful and very, very engrossing.
Tiger Tail is the film. I assume it's in both English and Mandarin?
It is.
Okay. Tim, what do you think of Tiger Tail?
Oh, really a delightful movie. Sacrifice at the center of what's going on in this beautiful, beautiful drama. It flourishes, cinematic flourishes indeed. Shades of Wong Kar-wai here, especially when we're in Taiwan, a little bit of In the Mood for Love, maybe a little Chungking Express, you see. But when we're here in the United States, when he's an old man, you see some old Ang Lee. A little Pushing Hands, The Wedding Banquet, even a little bit of The Ice Storm. So this, you know, it might be his directorial debut, feature directorial debut, Alan Yang, all that Parks and Recs and Master of None notwithstanding. He's a very learned filmmaker, and you can see where that education came from. from. And it really, it shows up in this filmmaking. It's just beautiful filmmaking.
Tiger Tail, a new film that's streaming on Netflix. Charles, what did you think?
I think the adjective elegiac might be appropriate for this. And it's about choices you make and choices that you regret. To get to America, the younger character, the one played, as Claudia said so well, by Hong Chi Lee, has to give up the woman he loves and marry a rich man's daughter so that they can emigrate. And they don't give him a lot of help. Once he gets here, he really has to struggle. But he never forgets his first love. And it's about coping with those losses and those choices. It's understated and tasteful and poignant. And I quite liked it.
Tiger Tail, rated PG, the first of three straight Netflix streaming films that we review on the program. Alan Yang, the writer-director, in his feature writing and directing debut. Tai Ma, Christine Koh, Fiona Fu, and Hong Chi Lee star in the PG film. Also on Netflix, the French comedic drama School Life. It's written and directed by Mehdi Adir and Grand Corps Malade. The film stars Zita Enroat and Liam Perrone. Tim, what did you think of School Life?
Oh, I love this movie. It's just a wonderful little movie of the sort that I always enjoy. Grand Corps Malade, that's his stage name. He's a French poet and musician who goes by that name. Look him up. He's a very interesting fellow. And what he adds mostly to this movie is a lot of the musical soundscape of it. So this movie is about this young woman who goes to work in this very poor district outside Paris, where all these disparate sort of grouping of kids are. And these are some tough kids that she's working with. And she's sort of their guidance counselor slash security figure, and she has a team of people who works with her. And she's this young woman, and she's ridiculously beautiful and smart and dedicated, but she has a thing that's going on in her life. There's this one particular young man who's going to be the problem of her existence in this school. But there are all kinds of things going on here, and it's a wonderfully told story. It kind of reminded me of another lovely French film called The Class from about 10 years ago, a Laurent Canet film. It's great, great acting by all these kids, most of whom are whom they are. It has sort of a De Sica kind of feel to it in that way. These kids are just playing versions of themselves.
School Life, a film from France that's on Netflix. Charles?
I also liked it. I think it's a little bit, in some ways, kind of a Madame avec amitié, the feminine equivalent to Sir with Love, that the young woman Tim describes is hardworking and dedicated. The kids kind of steal the film because there are some excellent performances from these unknown actors, you know, who are just kids being kids, but they're convincing. They're not mugging. You believe them. You care about their story. My biggest problem is I don't think they translate the French slang particularly well, which is what the kids speak, and even the technical terms that the heroine and the other characters use to describe their jobs aren't rendered as effectively as they might be in the subtitles, but that shouldn't detract from the film itself.
All right. And Claudia, what do you think of School Life?
Well, I agree with both Tim and Charles. I liked it quite a lot, but I want to make sure that people watch it in the original French with subtitles and not the dubbed version, because I initially began to watch it in the dubbed version, and hearing American voices and, you know, all of that was very off-putting. I had an entirely different reaction to the first 15 minutes, and then when I switched over to the French version, I appreciated it so much more. I think it also captures a lot of the subtleties of what's, you know, going on in Paris, you know, with some of the racial conflicts. You know, a lot of these students are Algerian. Some are from various, you know, children of immigrants from Africa. It feels realistic. It feels well acted. It feels like it really captures the rhythms of daily school life. And I love that nobody is a stereotype. Every character is developed with depth and nuance. There's a feeling of authenticity there. I think Zita Enroat is great. I think Liam Perrone as Yanis was excellent. And there's another young actor who she kind of discovers his musical talents. His character's name is Lamine, and his name is Ibrahim Fasher. He's wonderful. The young actors are just so wonderful, and I think the adult actor, Soufiane Gourob as Massoud, who is a dedicated math teacher, is wonderful as well. I thought of the class as well, and I thought it was just, it's very well done. But be sure to see it in French.
All right, School Life, unrated streaming on Netflix from writer-directors Mehdi Adir and Grandcore Malade. The romantic comedy from Britain, Love, Wedding, Repeat, stars Olivia Munn and Sam Claflin. It's written and directed by Dean Craig. Again, it too, streaming on Netflix. Claudia.
Oh, dear.
No repeat for you, it sounds like.
Love, Wedding, No Repeat, yeah. Well, you know, it makes you appreciate movies like Four Weddings and a Funeral and Death at a Funeral, which actually the writer-director here wrote, Death at a Funeral. I don't know if you remember that. It was really funny British farce from 2007. It was remade. An American version was remade. It wasn't great. But it was one of those rare, sort of very slapsticky and scatological and politically incorrect comedies that actually was pretty darn funny. Anyway, so this particular, his writing, I think, can be really good. Here, I think everything kind of goes awry. Sam Claflin is no Hugh Grant. And it's trying so hard. Everybody's trying really hard to be funny. It's exhausting. It's kind of irritating. It's not. It has a couple of moments where you might laugh a bit, but mostly kind of mercy laughs, not real true chuckles.
All right.
Yep.
Okay, Love, Wedding, Repeat. Tim.
This movie. Frank Oz directed that 2007 film, and Neil LaBute, that 2010 film, which starred Chris Rock, and Sam Claflin's no Chris Rock either. This movie, and let me tell you about this movie. This movie is a complete cheat. This movie is those two movies. You Love, A Wedding, Repeat, yes, and it's based after this French comedy. It's based on a French comedy. But nevertheless, every single thing that happens in this movie happens in both of those Death at a Funeral, right down to the little drug thing that happens. Claudio, remember, there's a whole thing where somebody takes some ecstasy or something, and then in this movie, there's a whole thing where somebody takes a drug, and all of the conversation. I'm like, but this is the same movie. Dean Craig keeps making the same movie, and you're not tricking me, dude.
All right, Tim's on to you. Love, Wedding, Repeat. Charles.
If you ever needed something in a dictionary to illustrate the term first world problems, it would be a still from this movie. It's about a bunch of rich, vulgar twits who run around saying stupid things no one would ever really utter. Not even the beauty of the Italian villa can distract you from the idiocy. And it's got Judi Dench using dirty words in the voiceover. Imagine. And that's all there is.
All right. Love, Wedding, Repeat. Streaming on Netflix, Dean Craig, the writer-director, it's unrated. Trolls World Tour was originally scheduled for a major theatrical release, the animated adventure comedy, but it instead is debuting on video on demand with multiple cable companies as well as other on-demand platforms like Amazon Prime Video, Google Play, Apple TV, and more. It was not made available for our critics to review, Trolls World Tour, so we will review the film next week, but it is available to be seen this week on Video On Demand. It's rated PG. Walter Dorn is the director. The drama Stray Dolls is a Video On Demand offering that's directed by Sanjui Sinha. Tim, what'd you think of Stray Dolls?
You know, it's not like I haven't seen this movie before. All of us, we've seen this movie. It begins with this young Indian woman who arrives at this motel, this beat-down motel run by this Russian woman played wonderfully by Cynthia Nixon, and she has to give her a passport, and, you know, it looks like it's going to go bad right from there. And you feel like you've seen this movie before. She gets this roommate. Her roommate is this sassy sort of white trash hookery type chick who carries a knife. And you figure, yeah, I've definitely seen this movie before. And then it takes a left turn. And it kind of keeps doing that as you work your way through this movie. Every time you think you're in this movie that you've seen a whole bunch of times, it takes a left turn. And I rather enjoyed that about it. Eventually, I just decided to sit down and let the movie be the movie. And the movie got pretty good, pretty intense, kind of Bonnie and Clyde-y, only, you know, more like Bonnie and Bonnie-y. And I think I kind of like this movie is what happened to me.
Where's it set, Tim?
It's set in some sort of, I'm not exactly sure. It's set in some sort of like a grungy city like Pittsburgh, or maybe okay. It's New York, like a Hell's Kitchen or something like that.
Claudia, what'd you think of Stray Dolls?
It's set in Poughkeepsie, New York. So that much I can tell you. Not Pittsburgh, but Poughkeepsie. But I don't think I've ever seen a movie set in Poughkeepsie that I can think off the top of my head. So there you go. I guess I was a little less high on it than Tim. I think it's a mixed bag. I think there were times when it was quite intriguing and sort of incisive about what it's like to be desperate and young, and, you know, in the case of Riz's character, played by Geetanjali Thapa, quite well. She's an immigrant, and she's, you know, Tim said she gives up her passport, and, you know, she was quite good. Cynthia Nixon's always good, and she was really good as this kind of Eastern European manager of this motel. And there's, you know, a lot of violence, and it does kind of go in ways that maybe you're not expecting, but then you do expect parts of it. I don't know. It just, I felt like it was kind of emotionally driven, but
all
I
right.
felt like it was a mixed bag in the sense that the characters weren't terribly well developed, and it felt kind of distant and cold and a little devoid of purpose.
All right, hold that thought. Stray Dolls is the film. It's unrated and available on video on demand. We'll continue on Film Week on 89.3.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
It's Film Week on 89.3 KPECC. I'm Larry Mantle. I hope you're enjoying how the show has evolved. With no movie theaters open to go to watch films, that means it's at-home viewing where we can see some things that maybe wouldn't have ever been exposed to before, and where we can also see new movies that are available on streaming services or video on demand. We appreciate our critics, how quickly they've adapted to the whole new world of filmed entertainment. Our critics this week are Tim Cogshell, Claudia Puig, and Charles Solomon. Next up is the horror sci-fi film Sea Fever. It's a video-on-demand release. The movie is starring Hermione Caulfield. It's written and directed by Nessa Hardiman. Claudia.
Well, only if you're fascinated by all forms of aquatic peril should you venture into these waters. Never quite heats up as the sci-fi thriller I think it's trying to be. It has moments of being an epidemic thriller, so I guess that's kind of timely. An echo thriller, I think it bills itself as, but it feels undercooked and under-suspenseful and underwhelming, ultimately. The story itself wasn't that interesting, and it lacks the tension. Characters feel like they've kind of been, you know, pulled out of a playbook. It's about a kind of quiet and shy marine biology student who'd rather spend her days alone in a little lab somewhere. And she's put on a fishing trawler, and she doesn't get along with a very close-knit crew. And then something happens that ensnares the boat, and it turns out to be a creature. I won't give too much away, but it never really gets it doesn't get your pulse racing, and it doesn't have the, you know, I think appropriate. It doesn't necessarily feel claustrophobic either. All the things that should come from this kind of thriller don't really come to the fore.
It's giant fish stick. I know it. Sea Fever, Tim, what did you think?
Look, Claudia's right. This is one of those Buck 95 movies, you know. We got a Buck 95. We're going to set a movie on a boat. And we're going to shoot most of the scenes in the bottom of the boat. But what we are going to do is get a bunch of really good actors to perform all this stuff. Hermione, I thought, was really, really just wonderful. And Connie Nielsen and, of course, Doug Ray Scott. Miss Hardiman, her compositions are very, very good. And I like the way she works the action in this movie. And though this is her debut film, this is a lady with 30 years of Irish television behind her. And she's an alum of Jessica Jones, the Jessica Jones series, did two excellent episodes of that, a.k.a. Everything and a.k.a. Pork Chop, particularly wicked episodes of Jessica Jones. So this is okay, but, you know, if you want to watch her work, check out Jessica Jones.
All right. Talking about the writer-director, Nessa Hardiman, Sea Fever is the horror thriller. It's unrated, available on cable and satellite, video on demand, as well as multiple streaming platforms. Charles, can you give us just a quick review of Strike, which is a British animated film streaming this week?
Yeah, and it should be quick because it's a forgettable film. This has been apparently been sitting on the shelf since 2018, which is a good place for it. It's a little mole who wants to become a football player, who will play a soccer player rather than a minor, and everybody tells him, oh no, you're a mole, you can't see well enough in the bright lights of a game, you can't be a football striker. So before the movie has spent 10 minutes, you know how it's going to end. The stop motion looks like it was designed and animated at Rankin Bass about 50, 60 years ago. And after the work of Aardman and Laika, it just doesn't work. And why do you make a character who's an eccentric inventor in stop motion after Wallace and Gromit? You're just setting yourself up for the worst comparisons. And I'm not going to make any more of them.
You're breaking my heart, though, with the Rankin Bass diss there. I mean, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Charles?
Yeah, but I mean, you don't watch that for the brilliance of the movement and the acting the characters give.
It was 1964, I think, too. So, Strike, we're talking about British animated comedy. It's unrated, directed by Trevor Hardy, and available on multiple video on demand platforms. And the Netflix action comedy, The Main Event, features a number of WWE wrestling celebrities. Jay Karras, the director. Tim, a moment on The Main Event?
Well, you know, it has nothing whatsoever to do with the 1979 Ryan O'Neill, Barbara Streisand film, The Main Event, which was extremely disappointing because I thought it was going to. Nevertheless, this movie is about a little kid who finds a Lucho Libre mask that gives him the magical power of having a deeper voice and being able to wrestle really well. This happens at an opportune time because the house is going to get taken back by the bank, and he can fight in this fight and win $50,000 and save the house and all of this kind of stuff. Look, this is pointed directly at really young kids. I'm going to say 12 and under. And again, it has nothing to do with the Ryan O'Neill Barbara Streisand film at all.
The Main Event is unrated and it's streaming on Netflix. Those are the films that are new in release this week, but as we're doing every week, we want to give our critics an opportunity to talk about some of the terrific things that they're seeing at home. And we also want to take advantage of Charles Solomon's animation expertise to talk with us a bit about anime, Charles. And parents might want to have a sense of what their older kids are watching. What are some of the anime series that you particularly recommend?
Well, for parents, I would say there are three series they really need to know these days to understand what their kids are talking about. There is One Piece, and if you look in the background of one of the kids' rooms in school days, he has One Piece posters up.
That's funny.
Maybe the most popular animated franchise in the world. There are more than 900 episodes of the TV series. It's still going. It's sold over 470 million books in the manga, which makes it a rival to Harry Potter. It's a comedy adventure about Monkey D. Luffy and his Straw Hat Pirates. It's silly. It's a lot of action. Luffy is a wonderful character because he never thinks. He just goes charging in. But he is fanatically loyal to his friends and to the idea of friendship. It's lots of fun.
That's one piece, and that's available on Hulu, Funimation, and Crunchyroll. And the most popular animated franchise in the world. It's extraordinary, Charles.
It is. And I would love to interview the creator, though he stopped talking to the press a long time ago. But everybody loves Luffy and his friends. The other anime series they also refer to in school days is Dragon Ball, in particular Dragon Ball Super, which is the latest installment of what may be the ultimate boys series. Dragon Ball, when it was running in the boys magazine Shonen Jump, the magazine was selling more than 6 million copies a week for kids to read it. It's been animated. They tried to do it in live action. It's a lot of products. It started out as an evocation spoof of A Journey to the West, the classic Chinese novel, then went completely off on its own. It's a mixture of martial arts training, slapstick comedy, male bonding, and these over-the-top slugfests, all centered on the alien Super Saiyan Son Goku. And if in the days when we could still go to the gym, you would see guys in their 20s with Goku's gym t-shirts or work out like a Super Saiyan. When the first movie in the Dragon Ball Super franchise came out, I took my trainer from the gym to it, and he and his roommate were bouncing up and down in their chairs like they were 12 years old. Oh, he's ramping up again. Oh, I haven't seen this since I was a kid. It's maybe the ultimate boys series of all time.
Now, do the Dragon Ball, the different series like Z, and do they all relate to each other or stand alone?
Both. They first did Dragon Ball. It was such a hit that Toriyama did Dragon Ball Z, and then they animated another series that was Dragon Ball GT. They also recut it, the earlier series, to be Dragon Ball Kai, and now there's Dragon Ball Super, which is a new incarnation of things that Toriyama, the manga artist, decided to go back to. And it's all the characters people know and love, but with new adventures and new opponents and new levels of power that they can ramp up to. And finally, Goku will win the day with his Kamehameha blast of psychic energy and take down whoever, anybody.
Dragon Ball Super, the anime series we're talking about. Now, we have a clip from My Hero Academia, but Charles, just tell us a little bit about the series and then we'll hear the example.
Well, this is sort of the new kid on the block, and this is one that really, like One Piece, appeals to both boys and girls or men and women. It really crosses a lot of boundaries, and it's probably the closest thing in American culture to it would be Spider-Man, because the hero, Izuku Deku Midoriya, is not cool. He's not muscular. He's not huge. He's nervous and skinny and fretful and insecure. And like Spider-Man, he acquires his superpowers later. And so he's got this enormous learning curve. But what makes it, one of the things that I think makes him so appealing is that he doesn't do things for glory or rewards or money, but because helping the weaker is the right thing to do.
Let's listen to this this clip from the hit anime series My Hero Academia. It's a tense scene. The hero Deku is fending off the villain Muscular and tries to buy some time for his friend Kota to escape.
Let's just go! Come on! Your punch didn't hurt him earlier, remember? Besides, both your arms are busted up!
It's going to be fine! One for all! 100%!
I'm coming for you!
Detroit!
Oh! What's wrong? That was even weaker than before!
Okay. It'll all be okay! I will not let him get past me! Kota, run! Go now!
Great sound effects, Charles.
Yes. And when was the last time any American superhero, you know, got bones broken fighting for what he believes in or to protect someone? And there's a complexity to some of these characters. One of his frenemies, Shota, was abused as a boy. And so he won't use the superpower he inherited from his father. And Deku keeps arguing with him, no, you have to be the strongest version of yourself to fight for justice. And that's not the sort of thing that we do in our kids' series.
We're talking about the anime series My Hero Academia. It's available on Hulu, Crunchyroll, Amazon Prime. Let's talk about one of the features in anime before we break. We also have a clip from it. Can you quickly set up Mirai, Charles?
This is an absolutely charming film. It was nominated for an Oscar last year by the very talented Mamoru Hosoda. And it centers on Kun, who's this happy, chubby little four-year-old, and then his world is shattered when his parents do the unthinkable. They bring home a baby sister. And so he goes on a series of these fantasy adventures to learn his place in his family now and in the world. And it's an absolutely charming film. I assume Claudia and Tim saw it too, and may want to chime in.
Well, let's hear a clip. This Oscar-nominated film, Mirai, in this scene, the young protagonist, Kun, helps his parents pick out a name for his new baby sister.
Hey, Kun, so what do you think we should name the new baby?
I can pick? Let me see. Nozomi.
Nozomi. It's not bad. Yeah, not bad. Anything else?
Or maybe Tsubame.
Tsubame. Okay, Tsubame. Tsubame?
Those are just the names of his bullet trains.
Of course they are.
Claudia, you have a quick comment on Mirai. Have you seen it?
I actually have not seen it, I'm sorry to say.
Tim, have you seen it?
It was extraordinary. Just a beautiful, beautiful film that Charles turned me on to last year. So he's absolutely right.
Charles, you want to give us about 30, 40 more seconds on it, and then we'll break.
Well, again, it's about dealing with siblings, which can be so traumatic. And he visits his great-grandfather, who was injured in the war. He learns that his mother was a little terror as a little girl. And all these things ultimately teach him he's not just Kun anymore. He's a big brother. He has responsibilities. He has a new place. It's just such a lovely, charming film from one of the top directors in Japan at the moment.
All right. The director is Mamoru Hosoda. Mirai, the film from 2018. You can see it on Amazon Prime, Apple TV, Google Play, and Vudu. We're talking with critics Charles Solomon, Tim Cogshell, Claudia Puig. We have much more in the way of recommendations from our critics to come. It's Film Week on 89.3 KPECC. Great to have you with us on Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. Our program has evolved over the past few weeks with no movie theaters open for us to see movies on a big screen. We have so much great content, though, to see at home, and our critics are sharing it with us. Joining us this week are critics Claudia Puig, Tim Cogshell, and Charles Solomon. Charles is talking with us about his anime picks, and we're just talking about the feature film Mirai of a couple of years ago. Last year, Charles, we had the release of Promare, and this is going to be available to rent or buy later this month. Briefly tell us about this sci-fi anime.
Well, this is something very silly, very rollicking, and it's like being hit in the face with a Day-Glo custard pie. There are just these flamboyant colors, these angular designs. It's over-the-top action. You don't go there, don't watch it expecting a really coherent story or complex characterizations like you got in Mirai. But if you just want something wild and visual that you've never seen before, this is your film.
All right. Promare from 2019 will be available for home viewing later this month. And from just over a decade ago, Mamoru Hosoda's film Summer Wars from 2009. Charles, a moment on this.
Again, a terrific film. Hosoda is such an interesting director. And this uses a crisis in the cyber world that affects the real world. And he uses drawn animation for reality, CG for the cyber world. So he creates this interesting visual contrast. And it's, again, a terrific film. He's such a good filmmaker. And this does a lot of what Ready Player One and Wreck-It Ralph Wrecks the Internet tries to do, and does it better and did it first, that you really understand how these two worlds interact and how things in one do affect the other. And you've got in Natsuki a complex, interesting heroine who's an individual. She's not a symbol for girl power. She's not a set of things for marketing. She's a real character who has fears and worries, but who has the courage that it's she who ultimately defeats the cyber threat.
All right. Summer Wars is the film. Funimation has it streaming on its site. And Your Name from 2016, the most successful Japanese animated feature of all time, Charles?
Yeah, it even outdrew Miyazaki's work at the
Wow.
And again, Shinkai is another one of those new directors who are moving animation and anime especially in new directions. This is another one I suspect Tim and Claudia have probably seen because it got so much attention. It begins as a very sweet, silly, funny, body-swapping teen rom-com where two teenagers, one girl in rural Japan and a boy in Tokyo, start waking up in each other's bodies and dealing with some of those problems. But as the story develops, it turns into this very thoughtful, very deep meditation on the trauma that Japanese people still suffer from the destruction of what we refer to as Fukushima, and they call the Great East Japan Catastrophe or disaster. And they realize that, yes, even their homes can be destroyed. And in that earthquake tsunami, thousands of people were killed, entire villages were washed away, and it's something that they're still processing in Japan, and the government response to it and the problems therein. And Shinkai explores it in ways that are intriguing and interesting and very, very moving. It's one of my favorite films of recent years.
Your Name from 2016 on Amazon Prime and streaming on Vudu. Claudia Puig, want to ask you about some of your picks. Let's start with what's streaming on Netflix. And there are three films I know that you want to point out, beginning with Tell Me Who I Am from director Ed Perkins. Tell us about this documentary's premise.
Well, I think it's a fascinating premise. It reminded me a little bit of Three Identical Strangers that was out a couple of years ago. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. Oh, our critics love that. Yeah.
Yes, yes. I was one of them. And this one is about identical twins who, because one of them has an accident and his memory is wiped out, and his brother, his identical twin brother, helps him sort of brings his memories back to him, or he helps him sort of, you know, reconnect. But something happened in their childhood, and again, I don't want to give too much away because it really plays out like a thriller, that he sort of glosses over in order to protect him. And I don't want to say any more.
Okay.
It's something people should really see for themselves, but it's really powerful.
Tell Me Who I Am, documentary streaming on Netflix. You also want to recommend Noah Baumbach's film that stars Greta Gerwig, Frances Ha.
Oh, I love that movie. Yes. You know, you see how wonderfully they work together. I'm such a fan of Greta Gerwig's anyway. Little Women, by the way, I think is just out streaming as of a few days ago, too. But she just brings so much depth to this character. She's funny. She's a little sad. She's just a fully rounded, multidimensional character. And this is Noah Baumbach at his best. I love this, and Squid and the Whale particularly. And I think there's a couple funny lines in it that I have a good friend, and we sort of, you know, repeat those things to each other.
Francis Oz, the film, again on Netflix. Corpse Bride, also the animated film from Tim Burton. Such a terrific film.
Oh, love that film. You know, and the visuals are so beautiful there, because there are, you know, elements of kind of Day of the Dead brought into this. You know, when they go to the underworld, it's so much more vibrant and alive than the real world that they're living in this sort of Victorian England. And just, you know, it's so beautiful to look at, and it's so achingly moving and emotional and sad. You know, when his dog comes back, there's all these moments that just are almost heartbreaking.
It's been years since I've seen it. I'm going to check it out again, Corpse Bride. Then there are three Netflix series. Let's begin with Hentified, which is set right here in East Los Angeles.
Yes, there's actually a couple really good series that are streaming that are set in East LA. One is Hentified, and one is Vida, which is was originally on Starz. I think it's now on Hulu. They're both really good, and they tell different stories, but they deal with gentrification, and they deal with family, familial struggles. And in the case of Vida, it's about two sisters who come back. They're kind of they've grown apart, and they come back because their mother has died. In the case of Hentified, it's about three cousins who are helping their grandfather keep his taco shop going. Both of them are really good. They're made by Mexican Americans. They have largely, you know, Latinx writers in the writers' room, and they're both really great series. I urge people to see both Hentified and Vida.
Hentified again on Netflix, and Vida is on either Starz if you're a subscriber, or Hulu has it streaming as well. And back to Netflix, Claudia, you tell us briefly about the 4-episode series Unorthodox.
Oh, I love this. I just watched this at the suggestion of a good friend and who had read the book. It is based on a true story. I think her name is Deborah Feldman is the author. About a woman who leaves her life in this very, very cloistered Orthodox community in Brooklyn, in Williamsburg. And this plays out like a thriller. There's elements of a spy thriller. It takes place in Williamsburg in Brooklyn, and then also in Berlin, where she flees to. And that's not giving anything away. I think that's revealed pretty early on. The lead actress is this Israeli actor named Shira Haas, who's amazing. She's just so, she brings so much depth to this character named Esty, and she never feels like she fits in, and women are so kind of tamped down in this world, but it doesn't necessarily, it gives you a full sense of the world, of the beauty, of some of the traditions and the rituals. Her wedding is one of the most beautiful scenes I've seen. And it doesn't really create villains.
All right. We're talking about the series on Netflix, Unorthodox, based on the memoir from Deborah Feldman. You're listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. We're going to hear Tim's picks as we come back in just 1 minute.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all 4 of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
It's Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle, Tim Cogshell, Charles Solomon, Claudia Puig, all joining us with their picks on the best in at-home viewing. Charles earlier took us through some of his anime picks for both series as well as features that are available for streaming, and Claudia talking with us about some of her favorites on Netflix. Now Tim Cogshell to share some of his favorites. Tim, let's start with a Netflix series that you want to tout, On My Block. It, too, is set in Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's set in a sort of make-believe neighborhood of Los Angeles that doesn't actually exist, but feels very Inglewoody to me, having been hanging around South Los Angeles for a very, very long time. And I love the cast of this show. It's set amongst a bunch of teenagers who first meet them, I think they're sophomores in high school. I think we're into season two or three now, and they're getting to that point where they're about to graduate. So we follow these diverse group of kids, a Latino boy, a black kid, a little black slash mixed girl. As they go through the sort of trials and tribulations of living kind of in the hood, where things aren't nearly as bleak and horrible as you would think. One of the characters in this show is South Los Angeles, actual South Los Angeles, those long streets with those beautiful vistas of palm trees on both sides, yeah, looking up toward the mountains. It's just absolutely gorgeous. All those little beautiful houses painted in every color of the rainbow. And yeah, you have some stuff that has to do with gangs, but it's not all about gangs. It's mostly family and relationships and being in love when you're a teenager. I love that little show.
On My Block is the series, and you can see it on Netflix. Let's talk about a freeform cable channel series that you also want to recommend, Motherland Fort Salem.
Yeah, I really like Motherland quite a lot. Elliot Lawrence show. Elliot Lawrence gave us the big gay sketch comedy show and Claws and a few other shows that are sort of female centric. So that this doesn't surprise me. It's about an alternate USA where during the Salem witch trials, the tables were turned. And there ended up being a sort of negotiated settlement between the witches, which are real, and the United States of America. So here we are 300 years later, and the witches, these very powerful witches, are basically the United States Army. Women in general are the sort of matriarchal figures in the country. Now, there is a schism amongst these witches, and what's going to happen there is going to be interesting. I love this alternate history. I love the sort of female dynamic in this show. I love the magic in this show. The special effects are absolutely superb. And it's the sort of show that releases one a week, so you only got three, and then you have to wait.
Motherland Fort Salem on Freeform is the series. On HBO, a series that's gotten tremendous attention and, by all accounts, dynamite ratings, the series The Watchmen. Tim, for those who haven't seen it, what's it about?
The Watchmen picks up more or less where the Watchmen film left off, which of course picks up more or less and tells the story of the Watchmen comic book series from Alan Moore. This series, though, is very aware of the present day. And it incorporates, Damian Lindelof is doing this particular series, it incorporates much of the politics and the sort of dynamic that's in the air now in the series, even though the series is very much grounded in that Watchmen series. The characters carry over from one to the other. The new character in the series is played by Regina King, Mother Night. She's this cop. Although cops in this series must wear masks, and all of that is extremely complicated. Look, this is an extremely controversial show. It has a lot of haters from the radical right, and if you watch this series, you'll see why. But Damian Lindelof was very pointed about the story he wanted to tell, and even in the series, he sends literal messages to those watching the show. One of them says, "If you don't like my story, write your own."
The series is The Watchmen on HBO. By the way, HBO, for the month of April, has a number of new films that are being introduced, including The Nice Guys, which came out a few years ago, Slumdog Millionaire from 2008, Jonathan Demme's Something Wild from 1986. One of my favorites, a very, very quiet film, Yulee's Gold. Claudia, you want to chime in on Yulee's Gold?
Yes, I love that film.
Isn't that a great one?
My favorites. Yes, Peter Fonda's finest performance. And, you know, he recently passed away. And that is just such a wonderful film. He plays a beekeeper and with so much depth. And you just really get a sense of his character. You get a sense of the place. It was an absolutely beautiful film. And I remember it was, you know, it was a nominee for, well, he was nominated, I believe, for Best Actor, and it was a nominee for Independent Spirit Awards. It was just a beautiful film.
Hard to believe it's been over 20 years ago for Yulee's Gold. Tim, back to you to talk about some of the classic films on Turner Classic Movies and the TCM app. One of them being, and I think it might have aired just a couple nights ago, Otto Preminger's Carmen Jones.
Oh, fantastic film from 1954, Carmen Jones, the wonderful Dorothy Dandridge in that film, and some extraordinary musical performances from so many people. Otto Preminger, one of the few directors at the time, giving an opportunity to black actors of stature, mostly singers and whatnot, the opportunity to make movies like Carmen Jones.
And while we're in a musical frame of mind, Stanley Donen's 1954 classic Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
I love this movie with all my heart. I think only Wade Major perhaps loves this movie more than I do, particularly. Well, I love the book, but particularly those dance numbers, the athleticism of all of those numbers was just absolutely magnificent. And that color, that Technicolor, it plays as vividly today as it did back in 1954.
So Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, and you and Wade for two brothers, we'll call it there. And Stanley Kubrick's Spartacus, which I saw just about a week ago, just such a great film. And of course, with that, the screenplay from The Blacklisted, my mind's just gone blank. They did
Dalton
the movie
about
Dalton Trumbo. They did a film about him a few years ago. What a great film.
Absolutely. The film, the wonder, of course, we just lost Kirk, a couple of weeks ago, I guess it is now, that we lost him, and he giving that opportunity to Dalton and actually putting his name in the credits. Look, it's a beautiful, beautiful movie. It's funny about Spartacus. I always, when people ask me about, as we approach Easter, people ask me about the religious movies that I recommend for Easter, and I always recommend Spartacus. And they were like, what? I'm like, Jesus is in the movie. Jesus is in the movie. And if you watch closely, you see Jesus in the movie.
Spartacus, again, on Turner Classic Movies and the TCM app. And quick notice for All the President's Men from 1976.
All the President's Men, a fantastic Alan J. Pakula film. And, of course, a film that sort of eventually led to a presidential impeachment. We're, of course, just coming off of a presidential impeachment. So interesting from a political, historical point of view. What I really love the most about that film are the performances of Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman, who don't look anything like those two men that they were actually playing.
No, absolutely not. But it's just it's one of the great films, and arguably had its biggest effect in the recruitment of young people going into journalism. It made it look so exciting. Hopefully they weren't too disappointed once they started reporting from typical newspaper beats. Tim, thank you so much. As always, that's Tim Cogshell, Claudia Puig. Thank you, Claudia. And Charles Solomon joining us as well. Have a wonderful weekend, and we hope you're able to enjoy some terrific entertainment at home. Please stay safe. Back with you next Friday and Saturday for the next Film Week.